Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Grow connects you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights and weekends. There are no subscriptions, no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/try now today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/try now. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
Good afternoon, evening, wherever you're at. Grateful to be here as always, boys. Let's get cooking. I'm already halfway out of water. I was thinking to myself, I'm going to get this thing filled up before we go live. And I've already glugged down half of it. Not going to make it through the episode. Song never gets old, baby. Never gets old. Welcome back. Welcome back, man. I tell you what, man. We got a little bit of gossip in the NFL today. We got a little bit of Monday Night Football juice. Man, I've been seeing this guy on Twitter. I can't remember his name. The guy's face just pisses me off. I can't explain it. Some crypto millionaire, dude. Millionaire, you know. The guy's face just pisses me off. I'm sitting here doing the, you know, I scroll Twitter in preparation for the show. This guy's mug just keeps popping up on my shit, man. And you know how it is. You know how this social media shit be, you know. When for good or for worse, if something gets a rise out of you, they're going to keep showing it. I don't know why, but when the show goes live, I start burping. I start getting stuff coming up. It's almost like, God, it's like Dee Reynolds in Always Sunny when she gets in front of crowds, she starts gagging and shit. I feel like my version of that is burping, you know? And I've also noticed that when I go live, like, I don't consciously feel nervous, but I notice no matter what the temperature of the house is, I get a little bit of sweat around my waistband. So if I'm training, you know, every night of the week I'm either training or coaching, and so I obviously sweat during those activities. So I'll actually put on the shorts that I'm gonna train in before the podcast, because if I don't, I'm just gonna waste two pairs of shorts instead of one. I sweat through the damn waistband. This is a brand new development. And we've been at this. This is our 95th episode. We've been at this about a year and a half. We started in January of 24. And I ain't never gotten sweat around my waistband until about, I noticed it about a week ago for the first time. Just a especially if the sweat is like dark color. Or sorry, this shit is throwing me off, man. This goddamn AC. I turned it off. I turned it back on. I didn't want to douse the waistband, dude. I didn't want to douse it. Let me know if you guys. We're trying to get the sound. God, everything's just a nightmare right now. I just threw a Zen in, and I'm just swallowing spit after spit. God, you guys, bear with me today, man. It's a good day to be alive. It's a great day to be on In the Jar, as every day is. I'm trying to think what else I got going on, man. I found out that it's a superpower to get up after lunch and go walk around the neighborhood, throw some Alan Watts in your ears. Alan Watts, the great GOAT philosopher, talking about how all of life, all of nature is and should be centered around play. It's a lot of fun listening to that guy while my body digests my food. I get back, go and take a shit, and you're just feeling great. You're humming. We had Monday Night Football last night, another doubleheader. Listen, man, we got another week of Pacific time here in Phoenix. Our time does not change. Everybody else's changes around us. So during the summer months, we're aligned with Pacific time. And during the fall, late fall, winter months, going into spring, we are aligned with mountain time. So that means for one part of the year, we're 3 hours behind Eastern time. And for part of the year, we're 2 hours behind Eastern time. But let me tell you what. This Seahawks-Texans game, I did not make it through. And it wasn't because it was a terrible game. Now, the Texans' offense looked absolutely terrible. C.J. Stroud seems to be played out in terms of his honeymoon time as the Texans quarterback. And I think that honeymoon time started against my Bengals 2 years ago, by the way. I remember watching this Texans-Bengals game from 2 years ago, sitting in the BetMGM sports book right outside of State Farm Stadium in Glendale. I was getting ready to go see the Cardinals and the Falcons, which at that juncture was a snoozer. I would argue to this day that game would probably be a snoozer. But I remember that day because I had wagered $2,500 on the Cincinnati Bengals money line. Why did I wager that much money? Number one, I was sure of it. Number two, it was like minus 300. So in order to make any cheddar, you had to put big bucks on it. And I thought, Texans, they got a rookie quarterback on the road. The Bengals, no way they lose this one. And I was $2,500 poorer after watching C.J. Stroud have his coming out party for the Texans. Looks like that party's over. The guy is terrible right now. The offense is terrible right now. I watched the Houston Texans run three plays from scrimmage. It was second and short, I believe. Three plays from scrimmage. They run between the tackles, stuffed. They run between the tackles on third and one, stuffed. And this Seahawks D-line was just bullying the Texans' offensive line. Absolutely bullying them. Every guy on that front was getting behind the line to gain. Sorry, the line of scrimmage. The line to gain, I guess, would be the first down marker, right? Just bullying them. And what do the Texans do again on fourth and inches? They run it between the tackles and get bullied. So what I saw in that Seahawks-Texans game, number one, that sequence of plays that I just outlined indicated to me that whoever's calling plays for the Texans is a stubborn bastard. And when you're stubborn in football, that don't really work. We watched the University of Kentucky Wildcats have every opportunity to beat the Texas Longhorns on Saturday night. They get down to about the 1 yard line in overtime, Kentucky does. And what do? Three plays in a row between the tackles, and they get bullied every time. So I was thinking about these two sequences. I was talking to my gramps on it about it on the phone today. Why is this? Why do we have stubborn play callers? I was thinking about this after this sequence happened last night. As a coach, this is how I would think about it. As a coach, I want to believe that my guys up front are going to bully your guys up front. It's almost like if you have a kid playing youth football. I don't have it, but I imagine the feeling would be similar. And your kid's maybe not performing the way that the coach wants them to perform, but that's your kid. He should be playing, right? Why aren't you playing my kid? Well, he sucks. Well, I'm his dad, so I don't want to hear that. Why aren't you playing him? It's a similar line of thinking, I think, as a head coach. You want to believe that your guys are going to up front are going to bully and do their job. And I think that feeling, that sentiment gets in the way of making the right call. The right call in either of those scenarios is play action, roll your quarterback out in space, let him find a guy to score the touchdown or get the first down. So what I noticed in this Houston versus Seattle game was that Seattle greatly benefited from flipping the field. This is verbiage that's used by special teams coaches a lot at the college level and the professional level. Flipping the field. It's why special teams is so important. I don't get how somebody could sit and watch NFL Red Zone all Sunday because you don't see a single punt. Sometimes you see field goals. Punting is a phase of the game that I would guess 7 to 9 out of 10 regular football fans do not care about. It is actually one of the most important phases of the entire game, punting. Why? Because flipping the field effectively is maybe a top three most important thing for a football team to do effectively. I'd say turning the ball over is the number one thing, and that might be a Captain Obvious statement, but also with turnovers, you flip the field most of the time. But that's all I saw with Seattle. They were constantly getting... Again, man, I'm burping like, God, excuse me. I'm glad this is a male show. So Seattle was getting short field after short field after short field, and it's really easy for an offense to open up the playbook. It's really easy to have options, especially when you have the lead, and it's really easy to be efficient as an offense. When your playbook's wide open, when you know you're playing with house money, there's a psychological effect there. There's a momentum there that plays into the psychological effect. And Seattle just got short field after short field after short field. Now, I do think, given the circumstances, the Texans' defense played pretty well. The Texans made a play or two on special teams. Former Indianapolis Colt, while I was there, DeNico Autry had a nice field goal block. He had a nice block. He was right there in the middle of that field goal blocking team. And he just hip checks the snapper. Just hip checks him. I wish I could do it. Just, you know what I mean? Just, and he's so strong.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
That he bumps the guy out of the way, is able to get his hand up and block the field goal. I get really impressed with plays like that. I don't understand why people just want to see offense. Unless you don't know the game. I get most fired up watching special teams. You know why? Because nobody else cares about it, and I'm a motherfucking contrarian, boy. That's the real deal. That's how I, special teams was how I was even considered to play at higher levels. It takes grinders, it takes warriors, it takes motherfuckers who want to go down the field and run through a motherfucker face. So I like punts. I do like what they're doing with the kicking game in the NFL. It's nice to have the kicking game as it was in the olden days in college. And then it's nice to see the new kicking game in the NFL. You kind of get the best of both worlds there. The NFL, they're trying to keep guys safe, but they're also trying to encourage more action on the returns, more returns. So it's nice to get best of both worlds there. I'd talk about special teams all fucking day if it were up to me. But not a lot of people really understand how important of a phase that game is. The first game that occurred last night, Lions versus Buccaneers. Buccaneers go on the road to Ford Field and get trounced. They had a crushing injury with Mike Evans. The way that guy landed on his right shoulder was absolutely brutal looking. It looked like he got concussed as well. Baker was throwing a couple hospital balls last night. They only scored 9 points. I believe the final was 24-9. I cut it around the third quarter. I had to speed run that game in preparation for this game because, like I mentioned on the show before, I mean, what is it with – I eat good. You know what I'm saying? I eat very healthy. I have an active lifestyle. And every time I go live on this goddamn show, I got to burp every 3 seconds. Baker was throwing some hospital balls, I thought. The offense just couldn't really get it going. Look, this Lions secondary, this is something I believe in the bottom of my heart that I'm just starting to realize. We have not seen the depth of certain NFL teams be tested yet. We're seeing the depth of a lot of them get tested because injuries are at an all-time high for whatever reason. But until you see the depth of an NFL team, you can't convince yourself resoundingly that they're a contender. You have to see the depth. I remember when I was a Samford Bulldog at Division I FCS Samford, when we would go to play Louisville, when we would take these $500,000 games to go get our ass kicked in Starkville, Mississippi, or Athens, Georgia, or Tallahassee, Florida, typically the start of the game was closer than you'd think. Our ones versus their ones. the talent distribution was pretty equal. At an FCS program, you get, at least when I was there, I don't know, it could be different now. At an FCS program, you get 63 scholarships to give to guys. At an FBS program like Florida, like Georgia, you get 85 scholarships to give to guys. Now, that was the way it was when I was there. A lot's changed, so that could be different. So these bigger schools, they got, I can't imagine how it is with NIL now, with NIL bankroll, stuff like that. But when I was in college, pre-NIL, these bigger schools, they had 22 extra scholarships to give out. And so subsequently, their twos, their backups, are just as good as our starters. There's a big talent drop-off between FBS and FCS with the twos, with the backups, because you have more scholarships to give. And nowadays, you have more NIL money to give. And so the game would really start to get lopsided when my little old alma mater would go and play Texas A&M when the twos came in, because their twos, who were fresh, were just as good as our ones who were no longer fresh. And our twos were not as good as their twos. And that was where the talent discrepancy started to really get wide. And so I say all that to say that even though the NFL is NFL, it's still a similar concept. How are you constructing your roster with the guys that you might not think would have an impact if everything goes to plan? But football is a lot like life. Nothing goes to plan. Nothing ever really goes to plan the way you thought it would. So we're getting, we're in a season where injuries are at an all-time high, and you're starting to see the depth of a lot of these rosters start to really be tested. And I bring that up because I noticed that Detroit Lions are operating with their secondary completely being backups. Both corners, backups. Both safeties, backups last night. And they played their freaking tails off, man. The Lions play man coverage fourth most in the entire league on pass plays, 55% of the time. And so you're asking both backup corners, both backup safeties to continue that and play man coverage and lock up a Tampa Bay offense that's been very productive, even without Mike Evans. And it's very sad. Mike Evans, he's probably done for the year. I wonder if Mike Evans is not going to be done with football for good. I wonder if that's the last time we saw him play on an NFL field. Incredible career. He owns literally every single Tampa Bay Buccaneer record around receiving. I wonder if it's not the last time we'll see Mike Evans in a Tampa Bay Buccaneer uniform or in an NFL uniform on an NFL field playing football. He's had so many injuries. He had just gotten back from a hamstring injury last night. And now we're looking at it. I mean, he didn't even survive a half. It's not on him. It was just freak play, landing on your shoulder like that. Broken clavicle. Brutal. I can't imagine how painful that was. Is. So I wonder if that's not the last time we see him on the field. So, anyways, the Lions have obviously constructed their roster to have guys in key spots like defensive back step up when needed and play their tails off against a good Tampa Bay team in man coverage, nonetheless. 55% of pass plays this season, Detroit has played in man coverage. It's a big ask. Rock Ya-Sin, who was a rookie with the Colts when I was there working, second-round pick, It's his fifth team in seven seasons. He's been passed around like the neighborhood hoe. You know? Guy balled. Guy played great. Really, the only hiccup for both defenses played great, I thought. You look at the stats from the first half of this Lions-Bucks game, and you would think it would have been a blowout. But Tampa Bay was still within two possessions. At one point, they were within one possession. It was a crazy sequence of events. Both teams turned it over twice in the first half. There were two turnovers that occurred very quick. Tampa turned it over. I mean, we're talking about the nitty-gritty of this Tampa Bay-Detroit game toward the end of the first half. Tampa Bay actually turned it over on consecutive plays to end the half. And then they got another takeaway and end up getting 3 points right before the half. Like Amik Robertson, who is another backup guy for Detroit, backup corner. I think he backs up. Oh, who's the guy he backs up? They got Kirby Joseph. Terrion Arnold, that's who he backs up, the corner out of Bama. Amik Robertson, beautiful punch out. Beautiful punch out. And then the very next Tampa Bay offensive play, what's his name? Arthur Mallett rips the ball away from Cade Otton in literally a takeaway type of shit that used to happen when my white-ass Mormon youth team used to go and play against the Blackbirds, who were all the darker skinned kids. You know what these trap kids used to do? They'd hand me the football, and this is before I really learned how to hit. Playing ghetto teams, by the way, when you're a young kid coming up in football, that's where you learn how to hit. That's where you learn how to play physical. That's where you learn how to play ruthless. It's when you're an innocent little white kid like me and you play against some of these crack babies. You know what I'm saying? I wish, and by the way, that's not supposed to sound racist. I wish I was a crack baby sometimes, you know, because they got that toughness. They got that ruthlessness. And I remember one time they handed me the ball, double slot 22. I was a fullback. They handed me the ball, and one of these trap kids, they just ran up to me and took that shit from me. And that's kind of what Arthur Marlett did to Cade Otton. You know, a little black on white crime, baby. The good kind. Damn, I feel like I sound kind of crazy with all that. Let's check in on the chat here. Chicken Nuggets is king, says Bengals suck. All I got to say to that, baby boy, 33 to 31. That's what I was going to say. Rohit, OP, Messi or Dupree. Lago 14, hello, I'm from Brazil. Shout out to Brazil. Brazil's in the house, in the chat, baby. Welcome. Teddy Belcher, look at the NFC West bye week. Three teams are off this week, and the 49ers will push 6 wins first. El Paso, Mountain Time, 49ers win. One interception versus interesting. Blue Jays, Dodgers, World Series. Yeah, you know. It's really hard for me to care about baseball if my Cincinnati Reds aren't involved. I don't know what it is. I love baseball. My grandpa was a pro. It's just I do not care if Cincinnati's not involved. It's real, and obviously we aren't really ever. But yeah, I mean the Dodgers. Everybody hates them. They got the most expensive roster I've probably seen in any sport ever. I'm probably wrong, but that's what it seems like. And that was my dog. What are you hollering at, motherfucker?
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. from plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
So where was I? Yeah, you know, the Tampa-Detroit game. I looked at that score. Like I said, I missed the game. Speed ran it today. I missed the game because I was at jiu-jitsu. I checked the score last night. It looked like a lopsided game. It really didn't feel like a lopsided game. You had a big play from St. Brown on the first drive of the game to get Detroit a touchdown. You had a 78-yard Jahmyr Gibbs touchdown scamper. But other than that, you know, Tampa Bay hung around. They did have that one big jailbreak screen to Tez Johnson. The seventh round rookie has scored touchdowns in back-to-back games. And the most interesting part is this guy got adopted by Bo Nix's family. And then he and Bo were teammates at Oregon. Pinson, Alabama. Thought that was a pretty cool story. I guess his mom, for whatever reason, couldn't handle him. I don't know. I don't want that to sound bad. But Tez Johnson, adopted by Bo Nix's family. And then the guys were in the same draft class. What else, man? I saw a couple bad balls from Baker. He badly underthrew Amika Ibuka, who was wide open for a touchdown on one play. But, you know, I wanted to give Amika Ibuka his flowers. It was the first time I really watched him play for a whole game. And this guy, again, we mentioned Bo Nix kind of being looking like a veteran despite it being his second year in the league. It's because the guy was in college for freaking 9 years. And I think that's the case with a lot more of these guys. I think you're going to see a lot more NFL-ready players coming out of college, not only because NIL, college football, it's basically pro football at this point, number one. So they're going to be ready in terms of the money and all that stuff. But number two, these guys are spending a lot of time at different programs. They're spending a lot of time in the college game. And I think Ibuka is a good example of that. You look at this underthrown ball by Baker, and it was clear the DBs were in man coverage. Ibuka did a great job. This guy, he didn't catch the ball. It was incompletion. But I noticed this guy noticing the Lions. What is my deal? I noticed this guy noticing the Lions DBs in man coverage. And one thing that they teach when playing man coverage, I know this from playing defense. One thing they teach when you're playing man coverage is you stick your hand in there to break up the pass when the guy's eyes get big or when he puts his hands up to catch it. And I noticed Amika Ibuka, the receiver for Tampa Bay, not putting his hands up until as late as he could to try and mess the Lions DB up. It was really something you don't expect to see from a rookie, you know, is my point. You know, like I said, turnovers were a big factor in the second half. I saw Jamel Dean come in there, create a nice turnover. He was a guy that wasn't getting as many reps. I think Tampa was trying to try whoever the younger guy is underneath him out for a few reps a little bit, you know, try and get some tape on him. But Jamel Dean comes in there, makes a great veteran play at the end of the half. He was supposed to buzz to the flat. It looked like Tampa 2, too high shell coverage. And Jamel Dean, as DB to the nub side, his job is to buzz to the flat He didn't feel anything down there, so he kept backing up, and Goff didn't expect him to keep backing up into that zone, and he forces an easy pick right there. Jared Goff doesn't know that he's backing up. Like I said, you look at the stats from the first half, you'd think it was an absolute blowout. I think Tampa Bay had 58 total yards in the first half, something crazy. The defenses were both balling. And then they got like 50-something yards on the first drive coming out of the half. I think that was that same drive that the Tez Johnson scored on that jailbreak screen. Derek Barnes, guy I noticed for Detroit, he was coming off the edge opposite of Hutchinson. He was knocking balls, batting balls down off the edge all night long, it seemed like. That was a really impressive performance from Derek Barnes. I'm trying to think who else caught my attention from that game. Might be it. Let's flip the note sheet over here. I noticed something else, too, a couple days ago, and I wanted to cover it on the show. Carson Beck. Carson Beck threw 4 interceptions against Louisville. Should have been 5. He got bailed out by a roughing the passer call. But he throws 4 picks against Louisville. And they ask him what happened on the last offensive rep of the game where the Louisville DB forced a great interception, and he throws his receiver under the bus. He explicitly says that the receiver ran the wrong route in the game. And I was just kind of sitting here thinking, like, are we in the era of no accountability? Is that what this NIL era is doing to our players? Or do they feel like they got to throw their teammate under the bus? I know he probably regrets saying it that way. But are we in an era where we're just going to go to our press conference and say, the interception I threw was because my receiver ran the wrong route? That's what we're going to do? I think it's predictive of a bigger issue for the Miami Hurricanes specifically. You got the leader of your team, the leader of your offense, throwing other guys under the bus. I think it's predictive of playoff performance. I think the Miami Hurricanes do not even sniff the national championship this year solely off of what I saw out of Carson Beck in that press conference. When you don't have accountability, you don't have nothing. Even if that's correct, the receiver ran the wrong route, even if that's sound analysis, you don't go to the press as the quarterback and say that. At least you don't say it that way. Yeah, look, I'm all about guys taking accountability when they don't have to take it. Even if it's not true, you're the leader of the team, you go up to the media and you say, yeah, I should have thrown a better ball. Be a hockey player. When you have success, talk about the guys around you. When you fail, take accountability, even if you don't really deserve to take that fall. It's very easy. Very easy. You know, these kids, there's some parts of football where I say I like where the game is going. There's some parts of football where I say I don't recognize this shit anymore. What are we doing? You know? So that's kind of where I'm at with that. To further recap some other games that happened this past weekend, Drake May, I noticed, was 21 for 23 against the Titans, 91% completion percentage. I got to attribute all that to his processing speed. It just looks like he's seeing the game a little slower than a guy of his age normally would. I got to give Josh McDaniels credit there. It's probably not a better OC for Drake May to have in his corner as a young quarterback than Josh McDaniels. I see the New England Patriots really pushing the envelope in the AFC this year. Nobody expected that. I would have told you, listen, You got Mike McVrabel. You got Mike Vrabel coming back to where he played, had success in Tennessee, was unjustly fired by emotional Miss Amy Shrunk, the owner of the Titans over there. I could have told you that the Patriots are going to have success. The only question for me preseason with the Patriots was the personnel. And it seems like scheme, it seems like culture, easily, with leaps and bounds, supersede personnel. Look at Indianapolis. They got the best running back in the game, arguably, but you pair that with a guy in Danny Dimes who's wanting to create a renaissance in his career, as all guys do. And you're looking at a winning formula. You know, I don't know much about Shane Steichen or the culture he brings to the table, but it's obviously good enough. Best team in the AFC right now. You guys, listen, we got to quit buying this media Taylor Swift bullshit that Kansas City, after two wins, are all of a sudden the best team in the league. We got to stop it, man. You got to stop this narrative. It's this. The bias is crazy. You know, and I see fucking Nick Wright on my Twitter feed. It's ridiculous.
Oh, I think the Kansas City Chiefs are by far the best team in the NFL.
Shut the fuck up. Shut up, you Kansas City homer. You Taylor Swift-loving Chiefs queendom looking at motherfucker. You know what I mean? It pisses me off. And I am a Bengals fan. Okay? So you got to take that bias with that rivalry into account. Okay? But it pisses me off. How can you say when 2 weeks they were down in the dumps that Kansas City's all of a sudden the best team in the league? Shut up. Shut up. It's crazy. Mike McDaniel said that in order to win games, you can't throw 10 picks. He made that comment. We've said it a ton of times, and we'll say it again. This guy has lost his locker room. It's clear he has no idea how to lead a group of men, and he's probably not fit to ever be a head coach in the NFL. I'd take that motherfucker as my offensive coordinator, though. I'll tell you that much. I would take Mike McDaniel as my OC. I think he's going to be a great coordinator in the league for a long time. I don't think he's able to lead a group of men as a head coach. And not a lot of guys are built for that, by the way. It's not a personal statement against Mike McDaniel, you know. I just don't think he's an alpha dog. And I think in today's NFL, if you want to captivate guys, you want them to run through a brick wall for you, you got to be an alpha. That's my main complaint with Zach Taylor. I don't think he's an alpha. Players love him, though. That's what I'm hearing from people on the inside a lot lately. Players love Zach Taylor. They fight for him. And, you know, he's got the Burrow cosign. So I'm off Zach Taylor's ass a little bit, especially after the big win Thursday. I'm off Zach Taylor's ass until we do some stupid shit. And knowing the Bengals, they will do some stupid shit at some point. Whether that's schematically, whether that's as an organization. But again, I can't get on them too hard because they went out. They made that Flacco trade happen. First interdivisional trade for a quarterback since the 70s. And we've got life again. So I really can't complain as a Bengals fan right now. I can't believe I'm saying that. I can't. But you had Bruce Arians go on Pat McAfee's show today and say that the Steelers do not have the AFC North locked up, and they continue to talk about how the Bengals played on Thursday night. So that's pretty cool. I like hearing that. I enjoy it. For the first time as a Cincinnati Bengals fan in probably the last 2 years or so, I don't feel that much angst around this team. In fact, I feel optimistic. Going in here to week 8, the Bengals, my Bengals, they got the New York Jets at home. in the jungle. Looks like Tyrod Taylor is going to be the guy for New York. There were some weird comments today from the Jets owner. His name's Woody. I can't remember his last name, but his name's Woody. Jets owner Woody was asked by the media about the state of the organization, the state of the team. And he basically threw Justin Fields under the bus and said, when you have a quarterback playing like this, it's hard to win games. So, again, man, I just don't understand. People like Carson Beck, people like Mike McDaniel, people like the Jets owner, Woody. What do you have to gain from going to the media and throwing some of your guys under the bus publicly? Address it behind closed doors. I don't want to hear it. I'm part of the media. I'm talking about it right now. They're feeding me material for my show. But as a lover of football, I'm saying, like, keep that shit behind closed doors, bruh. You don't help your team at all by throwing your guys under the bus. Whether you're Carson Beck saying the receiver ran the wrong route and didn't take any accountability, whether it's Mike McDaniel throwing his quarterback under the bus saying we can't throw 10 picks if we want to win, or if it's the Jets owner, Woody, saying we can't win with this kind of quarterback play. Well, dude, go to your head coach's office, go to Aaron Glenn's office, and tell him that. Tell him that. I'm sure he has. And that might be part of why he said it to the media. He's trying to send a message. But it's clear they're going with Tyrod Taylor over Justin Fields. Justin Fields probably can't throw the ball as well as James Cook could. Justin Fields, he can't throw the football. He can't. Justin Fields, he'll make a lot of money in this league as a backup. But never again should Justin Fields get a starting quarterback job in the NFL unless the organization is in dire need. You know? I'd probably take Jake Browning as my starting quarterback over Justin Fields, by the way. Fans of the show know. I had an egregious Jake Browning take. I was coping. I was coping with the loss of Burrow. And I was coping with the state of the Cincinnati Bengals organization. I had a disgusting Jake Browning take. I said he was going to be the next Nick Foles. I said he was going to lead this team to the bowl before Burrow came back. All of it is the most disgusting take I've ever made in my life as a sports media person. And so I got a comment. I finally got a comment from someone on TikTok on that video today. And they just said, cough, cough, cough. And I was like, fuck! People are finding this shit, you know, but I'm going to stand on business. I'm not going to take it down. Don't go look it up, you know, because then the algorithm might push it to more people. I don't give a shit. It was the worst take I've ever had in my life doing this. And it might be, I hope it's the worst take I ever make. But, you know, you see guys like Skip Bayless, you know, making bad takes left and right, and they still get rich off this shit. So what do I care? Okay. The Giants-Broncos game. Look. Just more analysis on that. We'll hit the backup kicker. He missed a couple big extra points. A lot of the blame fell on the Giants kicker. He missed some kicks that he should have made. That's obvious. But the defense gives up 33 points in the fourth quarter. Look, this is what I'm talking about. The teams that are going to be there in January, especially with the way this league has been so injury-riddled this season, the teams that are going to be there in January are going to be the teams that have the depth. And I think part of why you saw the New York Giants completely implode on Sunday in the fourth quarter was because a lot of their DBs are beat up and they do not have adequate depth in the secondary. They got lit up. They got absolutely lit up. You know? So I think on one hand, the Lions are a testament to a team, an organization that values having depth all around, focusing on roster construction outside of your key guys. And by the way, this is an area of concern I have for the Cincinnati Bengals. But you got to focus on these not so key areas of roster construction, because they are key when you have an injury riddled league like we've got this year. And so I think the Giants are an anti teach tape case on that. I think that's why they broke down against Denver in the fourth quarter. They were playing some backup DBs and they got exposed. Their secondary depth got exposed. The Patriots, they seem to have good secondary depth. Again, this league is so injury riddled this year that you got to be able to have faith in your backup guys to step up. And that starts with the GM. That starts with the scouting department constructing the roster. It's almost like in a fantasy draft. How do you win a fantasy league? This is a microcosm. I hate comparing fantasy football to the real thing, but this might help some people. Think about your fantasy draft. A lot of cases, the way people win fantasy leagues are those rounds 7 through 15. Again, rounds 7 through 15. The layman would say, well, I'm just going to auto-draft it. We'll see what we get. You know, it doesn't matter. And I think that's how a lot of NFL teams might look at roster construction past a certain point. But that's where the juice is. That's where the juice is. In those late rounds, those maybe journeyman type of free agents. I'm telling you guys, the juice in the NFL this year, the teams that will be there in late January are going to be the teams that focus on roster construction past what meets the eye. I'm talking about depth. Because injuries are going to continue to happen. Football is the main certainty about life, and football is that there's going to be uncertainty. So we have to acknowledge the fact that the teams with the most depth are going to be the teams that are there in late January. Speaking of teams that I think are going to be there in late January, the Rams beat the shit out of the Jags in London on Sunday. One thing I noticed looking back at that game, Rams had three tight end sets on 24 reps. They only had 6 total reps in the last 3 years with 3 tight ends or more. And again, personnel, roster construction, that's a big part of the game. Another big part of the game is coaching adjustments. And this is why I believe Sean McVay is one of the best in the business year in and year out. They don't have Puka Nacua right now. So they make a personnel adjustment. They do a little scheme innovation responding to that loss of personnel. And they run 3 tight end sets on 24 reps in one game. That's 4X what they ran in terms of that personnel in the last 3 years. So that's the opposite of stubbornness. We saw the Texans be stubborn for 3 plays straight, running between the tackles 3 plays in a row from second down all the way to getting turned over on downs against the Seattle Seahawks, when the Seattle Seahawks front was absolutely bullying them up front. And so I'm going to be stubborn, and I'm going to say, well, we're getting our ass kicked up front, but I think we'll kick their ass the next play. No. We got to be fluid. We got to make adjustments. When we're lacking the personnel, when we're lacking the depth, you can compensate for that by making adjustments on the coaching side and adjusting the personnel to where you have an advantage all of a sudden, even though you're beat up. That's it. That's how you have success. Look, I've never coached in the NFL. I've never played in the NFL. I worked in the NFL for a year. I was in a building. So I feel like I know more than a lot of folks on this stuff. And that's why I feel impelled to talk about it. But you got personnel roster construction. If you can't scheme and make adjustments on the coaching side of things, you got to have the right personnel. And if you don't have the right personnel, then you got to be fluid as a coach. You got to adjust the personnel to your advantage with what you've got. And I think Sean McVay did a beautiful job of that against Jacksonville on Sunday in London. Now, best of both worlds, you have a fluid coaching staff that makes adjustments on the fly, and you also got the depth of the personnel to do whatever you want and have that flexibility. But again, not every organization is the same. I learned that working in sports. You work for one organization and then you go over to another. I remember interviewing with the Arizona Cardinals, and they were night and day from the Indianapolis Colts. And a lot of people think, oh, well, every NFL organization is run the same. They're under the same jurisdiction. Absolutely not. If you're looking at companies, McDonald's is probably going to run things a little different than Burger King runs things. You know, AT&T is probably going to run things a little different than Verizon runs things. It's just different companies. And each NFL team is its own company, so they run things different. It's very interesting. Okay, I'm going to let you guys go. We're at about 55 minutes. I really appreciate everybody tuning in. If you're new to the show, and I could take an inch and turn it into a mile here, number one, I want to thank you for watching. But number two, I impinge you. I don't know if that's the right word. I encourage you to hit that subscribe button, because if you're in here, you probably like football. The algorithm knows things. If you're in here, you probably like football. And if you like football, you're going to love our channel, man. And you're going to see us again. So go ahead and hit that subscribe button. And appreciate you doing that. We do Madden streams most days. So that's fun. Kind of test our own schematic skills, right? And then we're also posting daily clips. And we also have the show every day, which you're seeing right now. You can go to the channel and watch the replay if you are popping in late. You can go right down to this channel. Actually, I encourage you to just click the channel. You can pop out of the stream. Episode's done. And watch the replay. You can also listen to this show on any audio platform that you can think of. The most obscure audio platform are out there and the biggest ones. So if you want to force your girlfriend to learn a little bit of football in the car on the way to your next date, that's a good way to do that. Anything else? What else? What else? What else? I think that's it. Like I said, subscribe to the channel. We're here every day, Monday through Friday, 6-ish, 6:30-ish Eastern. And love you too, Corey. Appreciate it, dog. We'll be here, man. We'll be here. So when you're ready to sub, just go ahead and do it. But also, like, fucking sub, or I'm going to come find you. You know what I'm saying? Or I might just cry, you know? Might just cry in a corner about it. Great show. Great show. We'll clip this up for you. And we'll see you tomorrow.